All right. Well, thank you for joining us. We're going to get into the fats, fuels, and oils forecast for the week of February 1st. And just a quick announcement, we've been acquired by Fast Markets. And so you'll be seeing that around our site now. That will be Jacobson, a subsidiary of Fast Markets. And nothing really will change here in terms of your experience with us. It's just going to get better. With that, Ryan, do you want to get into the fats and oils forecast here?
Yeah, I'm happy to. And thanks for that, George. I've been getting a lot of questions, you know, today after our big announcement. We're all excited here. And yeah, no changes anticipated anytime soon. Definitely, I guess the only anticipated change is maybe some improvements as we work with Fast Markets to improve what we offer out to everybody, including maybe some improvements on this front, forecasting. So I'll jump right in. So used cooking oil was the focus this week. Obviously, that market's been red hot as of late. We're seeing prices as high as 50 cents delivered into the Gulf market. We're seeing those numbers into March and April, and we expect that those prices to continue here, as you can see from our forecast, into the summer months, kind of peaking out at an average of 51.18 in June. The drivers behind this are big demand. Obviously, there's a lot of renewable diesel demand in the market, a lot of biodiesel demand. This is domestic and internationally as well. So people that have their fuel pointed at the LCFS market are showing big demand for that low CI used cooking oil. But the European UK market is a big demand center as well. I think something that's affecting the market currently is difficulty accessing material out of Asia. There was a lot of material that moved into the EU last year out of China and the APAC market, and shipping issues shipping rates have gone up 300-400% over the last couple of months. That's put a premium on that market, and I think that there's just difficulty in ensuring delivery. So the EU buyers or the UK buyers have increasingly looked to the US, to South America to secure that material, and so we're seeing, you know, those buyers compete with buyers in the U.S. as well as other international buyers that are putting material back into the U.S. market. Decarbonization schemes continue to drive these prices, and I think we're going to continue to see that, as I said, into the summer. Some of the price relief the second half of the year is coming from an expected downward trend in soybean oil. So Tori is the expert, and he's the one that would talk about the soybean oil forecast, but that's expected to fall the second half of the year, and that's going to take some pressure off of the market. Additionally, we're expecting increased supply. So as the vaccine rollout continues, more people are vaccinated, and COVID restrictions are rolled back, things return a little bit more to normal, I think we're going to see an increase in used cooking oil supply. Stadiums, things like that, when they open up, obviously that's a big source of used cooking oil. I think we'll see things return more to a normalized supply structure in the second half of the year. And so that, again, will take some pressure off of prices as well. Onto yellow grease, which is, kind of talked about in conjunction with used cooking oil. Prices there have picked up as well. Those have been pulled higher by the increase in animal fat. So we've seen higher bleachable fancy tallow prices. That's kind of pulled up the choice white grease market. The choice white grease market's pulled up yellow grease prices. There's just not a lot of optionality out there for buyers at the moment. And so they're having to pay up in order to secure that material. Corn prices at 550, 560, those are supportive of higher yellow grease prices. Same thing with choice white grease prices. And the same thing with soybean oil. When you have soybean oil at 44, 45 cents, it's a steal to be able to buy yellow grease in the lower 30s if you're using that for fuel production, or even the mid to upper 30s. Corn oil is very strong. Ethanol production's tight. It's just an overall, that's been the story the last couple of months. It's an overall tight supply market up and down that low carbon intensity feedstock market, which, extends into the feed sector as well, and oleochemical. Yeah, I think with that, I've covered what I planned on talking about today. I'm sure I glossed over something. So if there's any questions out there on yellow grease or use cooking oil or any of the markets we cover, I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, Ryan. If anybody has questions, go ahead and drop them in the Q&A. We're kind of light on questions right now, so we can take a number of them. Ryan, this question is, do your forecasts account for increased consumption of FOGs used to produce renewable diesel into each new renewable diesel facility based upon the best CI feedstock in the closest proximity to the renewable diesel location that is starting up? So how granular is your forecast?
So I can't go like into the specifics there because that would, I mean, we don't want to give away all of our modeling secrets, but I will say that we certainly, that's a big, a thing we're obviously looking at is the curve of demand coming from the renewable diesel side, when those plants are projected to come online and what their feedstock requirements are going to be or what we think they're going to be. I think something that's worth pointing out is initially, I think a lot of people, us included, or myself included, thought that there would be a big pull on the low CI feedstocks to start with. But I think inconsistency of some of the specifications up and down the chain have pushed a few more people into RBD soybean oil, maybe a little bit of distiller's corn oil blend. And so that is that's certainly factored into the soybean oil forecast, but that's also considered into the low CI feedstock. So indirectly, yes, we are considering the renewable diesel demand curve and taking a look at what we think those plants will do with individual feedstocks through the rest of the year.
Okay. Ryan, Valero's earnings last week mentioned that the existing Diamond Green plant in Louisiana has expanded 20 million gallons in late Q4, Q1. Are you still expecting the larger expansion to start coming on later in 21, 22?
Yeah, I try to just personally refrain from like specific judgments on individual plants. But yes, I think Diamond Green has a history of delivering, I don't want to say delivering on their promises, but the plans that are in place or that have been in place in the past seem to be executed with efficiency and pretty close to the time that they say that they're going to be executed upon. So yes, I think that plant expansion that's planned is definitely going to be something that's going to affect the market here this year, next year as well. If I have my timing right, I have to double check. But then also, you know, some additional gallons that are coming on that might be separate from that Norco facility.
Okay. Do you foresee UCO continuing to increase in pricing in the next 3 months or stay steady into the Gulf and Savannah?
So 48 to 50 is what I would call the market today, both East Coast and into the Gulf. I think that we're going to see that value steady into March and April. And then when the next position comes up, see a little bit more a competition there and maybe push that a little bit higher. Now, with that said, you know, there could be some unexpected pressure. Say there's some good weather that continues to blow across South America. A lot of the pressure is taken out of the soybean oil market. Some cheaper alternatives become available. Or if this downtime in China with the Lunar New Year helps ameliorate some of the shipping issues, and there's some cheaper stuff that starts to head out of the APAC markets, that could pressure things. But you know, as things are now, I think we're going to continue to see some upper pressure into the summer, just based on tight supplies and big demand.
Okay. And just a reminder to all the attendees, if you have questions, drop them in the Q&A section in Zoom rather than the chat. And then that way we can go ahead and tackle them as they pop up. Ryan, are you seeing any backwardation in soybean oil market affecting forward sales?
Not yet. We've had that question asked particularly with like distillers corn oil. Some people have suggested there might be some pressure in the forward market basis, cheaper soybean oil. And that might be true for people that are selling, obviously, on contract that might be pegged to soybean oil. But flat price, I think there's still a little bit of a risk premium for people that are worried about ethanol downtimes. So there's just, obviously, people are staying at home. COVID is kind of limiting gasoline demand. And as a result, there's that risk for continued lower ethanol run rates, and as a result, tighter distillers corn oil production. And so I think that people are paying, you know, to make sure they have enough of this low CI feedstock, and that's keeping the forward market relatively flat, maybe a little bit of a premium to the spot market.
Okay. Do you expect to see lower grades close the gap to premium grades?
Yes. I think soybean oil and choice white have been at a pretty big discount to BFT, bleachable fancy tallow. So I think we're going to see those markets continue to climb. So the rate of increase in choice white grease and yellow grease are going to be a little bit steeper or higher than what we might see in the BFT market or the used cooking oil distillers corn oil market.
Okay. Is there a ceiling for soybean oil, for the soybean oil market? And what do you expect from the WASDE report next week?
That's
a good Tory question.
Yeah,
huh?
That's a Tory question. He's the mad genius when it comes to the soybean oil market. So I'll defer that to him. And okay. If there's a name attached from
I've got a name attached. I'll follow back.
We'll have Tory reach out to him.
Yep, absolutely. Do you think biodiesel plants are using less UCO at these higher prices? Could that take pressure off UCO pricing as they shift towards another feedstock?
I think that that's certainly a possibility. I think it's kind of I don't want to say a bifurcated market, but there's a couple different markets out there. So we're seeing trucks or smaller volumes trade as low as 44 cents into some interior biodiesel plants. And I think they continue to use and pay up for material. But that also, I think, is a function of demand diversification. So, you know, seller X might not want to sell 95% of their used cooking oil production into buyer Y, even if there is a big premium, just because there's obviously a risk associated with that. So I think anybody who's going into LCFS or has their fuel aimed at California is certainly still using as much used cooking oil as they can. I mean, we're seeing that in the smaller markets and a premium paid. But anybody who's not, you know, LCFS or positioned for LCFS, I think is using whatever the cheapest thing they can use at the time. And that's, I mean, honestly, soybean oil is going to work better than used cooking oil if CI considerations aren't taken into account. But as far as anecdotally, I haven't heard of anybody saying that's enough. We're shutting off the UCO valve and going straight soybean oil because it's too expensive. I think they're just, working harder to buy lower priced trucks and smaller volumes and trying to spread it out a little bit more.
Okay. Well, Ryan, thank you for that. That's the end of the questions that we have. Oh, we got one more. It just popped up. False call. Sorry, Ryan. How soon do you see LCFS spreading across other states in the U.S.?
This is just my personal opinion. I know that there's a lot of things in work, and Bob Lane is probably more of a person to ask about this because he monitors the regulatory environment very closely. My personal feel is that some of these state LCFS type programs were a way to kind of hedge against the prior administration's what some people may have thought were efforts to maybe weaken the RFS or not be as strong on decarbonization programs as certain states would have liked. So with a new administration, if there's a stronger federal program, then I think that would slow some of the state-by-state LCFS type programs. But as far as things that are like currently in play, Bob would be a good resource for that. But it sounds like there's a handful of places that are moving ahead and do have plans, but that again, that rate, I think with a change in administration and some optimism for some green initiatives and for some additional thoughts to climate change from the Biden administration, I think that may slow. But yeah, that's just my personal opinion, not an endorsement or an argument against. It's just kind of the way I'm reading the winds.
And if anyone wants to take that conversation further with Bob, his email address is bob@thejacobson.com.
Yeah, he's a great resource.
He's a wealth of knowledge on that front. That's all we have for today, Ryan. Thank you for all the attendees. We look forward to talking to you next week. We'll have Tori on next week, and he'll talk about the veg oils. All right. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.